Very good morning to everyone.
Good morning.
The first case on today's call is number 054432, the United States against David H. Swanson.
Good morning. May it
please
the court.
Good morning.
My name is Bill Tice, and I represent Mr. Swanson. This is, of course, a second appeal in this case. This morning, I'd like to focus on the calculation of loss amount under the guidelines. The first sentencing, the district judge said, well, the $6.7 million, that's something that the jury really decided, so I don't need to have any independent consideration. That approach, even pre-Booker, was manifestly wrong, and then we had Booker's decision from this court, and ultimately Booker's decision from the Supreme Court, and the case went back for review, and this time the district court came up with essentially the same dollar amount, $6.7 million. I think there may be a difference of a few hundred dollars, but it's essentially the same dollar amount. The problem is that the district court gave no meaningful explanation of how it arrived at that result. And as I said in the brief, we're not really here because the court is guilty of poor craftsmanship, although on that basis alone the judgment might be pretty questionable. But the very terse, cursory way in which the district court resolved this matter really covers up all sorts of problems. It was
Mr. Tice, she seems, I mean, what she did here is she justified the amount as the amount of risk from the transaction. And I guess the problem for you is that it seems supported by the record, because the company set aside $35 million for the transaction, which left $4 million in an account to which Mr. Swanson had access. He in fact, took $2 million, it would seem, of that money for himself, but the entire amount was at risk. And so, since it was at risk, isn't Judge Barker justified in including it in the loss amount?
I would say no, Your Honor. And first of all, we're talking about a total finding of loss of $6.7 million. We can get to the other $2.7 million.
Yeah, I just...
Right. I want to address your question about the $4 million. Even in cases of intended loss, a proper and necessary inquiry is, did the alleged victim receive value for what was given? So we know that $2 million was paid out and $2 million remained in the account. As for the $2 million that was paid out, it was our contention that the alleged victim received value. And that was something that the government never really came to grips with, and indeed one of their own witnesses acknowledged that on a deal of this magnitude, $1.9 million, $2 million, $1,880,000, the numbers keep sort of shifting around, but let's say $2 million, that was a pretty fair price for what was involved. So then we come to the $2 million. And I in studying the record for this morning's argument, I realized that there's one small error that I want to correct in my reply brief. I say in the reply brief that it was only in the most recent brief that the government floated this theory of intended loss. And that was partially incorrect. Because at first the government said, nothing was wrong. Go with that original figure in the PSI. In fact, the figure should be $51 million because that's the amount at risk, a proposition that this court, I thought, pretty decisively rejected. But then in a supplemental position paper, they talked about $4 million being at risk in the Mall to Clayton deal because that was the amount that was put in to that account. Now I home in on the real nub of Your Honor's question. The $2 million that was not spent, apparently the government would say, and apparently the district court would say, was intended loss. Now here we go back to craftsmanship. Why did the district court make that finding? Just because it went into this account? Was it following the idea that since Mr. Swanson had taken money out of this account for improper purposes on other occasions around court had said that, Your Honors would have something to latch on to. But there was clear testimony in the record that this was in that account, that $2 million, as working capital. Once they bought this Mall & Clayton company, this $2 million was intended to be used for working capital. And indeed, it remained in the account for months and months and months until Mr. Swanson was terminated.
Now, don't we have to also factor in the Country Mark loss and the Archer Daniels Midland loss, and when you include those, you've got a loss between 5 and 10 million, and that would be enough for that terrific, 14 level enhancement.
Well, Your Honor, when you say the Archer Daniels Midland loss, that's a real slippery one to get a hold of, because remember there were two episodes or two scenarios involving Archer Daniel Midlands. One was pre-Swanson's employment with Country Mark, where allegedly Swanson was getting reimbursement for expenses to which he wasn't entitled. And then post-employment with Country Mark, Swanson embarks on the Green Heat proposition where Archer Daniels invests. The district court, and remember, the original PSR wanted to attribute almost $2 million to the first Archer Daniels Midland episode. When we go back for resentencing, the government is saying all those numbers are fine, don't change a thing. But the court, in entering its second judgment, says absolutely nothing about the first Archer Daniels Midland episode. Now, are we to infer that she decisively rejected it? I don't know what to make of that. Representing Mr. Swanson, I'm not going to say that she made a finding that he caused Archer Daniels Midland a $2 million loss from that pre-Country Mark employment. And then when we look at the Green Heat episode, The district court's problem has got one finding on that has got one insurmountable problem. The government called a witness from Archer Daniels Midland and said, yes, we invested $1 million and we loaned money and
$1,350,000, I think it was.
Whatever it came to. And we lost everything. But he was specifically asked, in effect, did you find that you were cheated? No. I sat down and I went over the accounts, said this executive, and everything was in order. Now, the government may like to think that was a loss, and they presented some evidence that money from that investment in Green Heat went into Mr. Swanson's personal accounts. There was also evidence that money went out to pay for certain items that we would say were items related to the business. But, we lawyers and judges could puzzle over this and say, what does it mean? And I would say, in this case, on these facts, we don't need to do that. A business person from Archer Daniels Midland, which we've got to presume is pretty tight with a buck, and certainly with $1.3 million, went over this and found that everything was okay. Sure, they lost money. I'm sure they wanted to make money. But they weren't coming into court and saying that Mr. Swanson cheated them. So when we look at all of these items, there's smoke here. But the district court, I would suggest, mistook the smoke for real fire and certainly didn't give Your Honors the sort of record in which you could have confidence that the second time around the district court got it right. And, you know, we could say, well, maybe she got it right about the horse trainer, or maybe she got it right about the $400,000 where some of that was used to pay expenses, part of which were maybe Buckeyes and maybe not Buckeyes. The point is, on all of these, we don't really have a very firm idea. And on the big ones, like the Green Heat Project, we got evidence that's directly in the way. And as far as the intended loss from the Malta-Clayton deal, we've got a record that is at best ambiguous, and the district court really did not resolve that ambiguity. And I think we have to think of that in light of the position the government was floating. They were saying intended loss was $51 million. You can go back to your old figure of $6.7 million, and you're cutting Mr. Swanson a break. So, you know, this is close enough for the task at hand, was the government's position. There are other issues, but I think they're set out in the brief. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Tice. We'll hear now from Mr. Goodlow.
Good morning. Morning. Hey, police court. Excuse me. As I understand the process at this stage on that remand, the judge's task was to calculate a guideline sentence and then to decide whether she should sentence the defendant within that range or not. And if she didn't sentence him within the guidelines range, have a reasonable explanation for that sentence outside of the range. The defendant has challenged here the calculation of the loss for guidelines purposes, and specifically, as he's indicated, focused on that loss calculation.
Mr. Goodlow, what evidence supports the inclusion of a $525,000 loss to Frederico Martinez? Where in the record are we going to find support for this loss? Because, as you'll recall, we didn't want to go rooting through the record the first time around on this appeal. And as I'm sure you can probably guess, I, for one, do not intend to root around this time either. I mean, we need record sites for those losses, and I cannot find one in your brief.
The detail with regard to that loss is this. At the end of the case, as we were trying this, what, 3.5 years, almost 4 years ago, I had the FBI agent and the IRS agent who did a lot of the financial work testifying last. They went through and basically summarized for the jury the information they had regarding certain of Swanson's transactions. That included monies that were basically accepted from investors under false pretenses. One of those was Federico Martinez, and it was in connection with his promotion of another venture called La Hacienda. The exhibits were, in fact, referenced in our submissions to the district court in two or three different things that we filed. The last one was last April, where we went through and detailed for the court the things that supported our calculations, referencing not only the transcripts where testimony supported those things, but also the trial exhibits.
Where is it in your appeals brief? We're not going to root around for it, as I said. We don't do that.
My appeals brief, Your Honor, refers to the record that we just submitted, that I just referred to, that we submitted. If you like, I'll take a minute and find that reference to you, for you. Thank you. On page 21 of the brief, the court's finding is supported in a summary of the evidence in the United States' sentencing memorandum filed on April 22, 2005, and I reference the record 277 and 278. With that sentencing position memorandum was a very extensive list, actually not a list, but an appendix of materials. It's almost an inch and a half thick of materials that were submitted to the jury during the course of the trial, and Mr. Martinez's loss was included in that. We did a detailed a presentation for the court following, in fact, this court's admonition that it could not, in fact, find references to some of the things that were included in the loss calculations. With regard to counsel's focus here on the loss calculation, several things, I think, need to be cleared up. One of the things that counsel does is launch right into actually confuses the types of loss calculations. Sentencing loss calculation and restitution calculation, for example, aren't the same.
Forgive me for interrupting, but this is important to me at any rate.
Oh, by all means.
Because the district court did not seem to make express findings on whether losses not charged in the indictment were relevant conduct. And, well, is the defendant correct that you concede the point? I mean, were some of these losses erroneously included in the loss amount used to determine the length of the term of imprisonment?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think he's wrong on that. And I think that his argument is confusing you in this way. The scheme set out in that indictment covered more than the two or three executions that were set out in counts 1 and 9, I think it is, where the two parts of the indictment which showed the scheme being executed. But the scheme embraced more than those two instances of execution. Martinez is but one of the several parts of the scheme. The green heat promotion was another one. There was something called Bioland, which was still another. All of those things were resulting in funds flowing into this defendant as a part of the common scheme. She did, in fact, she being Judge Barker, did, in fact, make a statement to the effect that the course of conduct or common scheme included these things. I don't have that transcript here in front of me, but I remember that we went over that, and she made that kind of finding. Now, it may not be as detailed as counsel would like.
Well, it's very thin.
But it was certainly made, and it clearly was something that we did cover during the course of the trial. That evidence regarding sentencing loss that's in the appendix attached to the sentencing memorandum filed a year ago was something that was basically extracted right from the trial record. It's not something that was added in a supplement in any way. The confusion, I think, is being generated here with regard to merging the different types of loss calculations is something I think we need to address. For sentencing loss purposes, under this court's precedent, you look to what's within the breadth of the scheme. For restitution calculations, you may not, of course. And what he's saying, at least as I understand it, in part of his argument is that for some of these things that were used for sentencing loss purposes, you need to look and see if, for example, someone received some value. You don't make that kind of accounting for the loss calculations. You look to see what's within the breadth of the scheme. And I think that has generated confusion on more the resentencing here on Mr. Swanson. Another thing I'd like to touch on very quickly with regard to this loss calculation is this. The Council focused a little bit on the Malta Clayton acquisition. Here are some of the facts, I think, that are in the trial transcript, which didn't get, in fact, I think, his attention. When Mr. Swanson promoted acquisition by the corporation, he promoted the board in its initial meeting with him on that matter, cost him $5 million. Then within a very short time, he told them it would cost 10. He ultimately spent $25 million from the corporation's operating account for that acquisition. That was a misleading of the board. I mean, this is a part of the scheme that's outlined in that indictment. This scheme clearly covers more than $6 or $7 million. We took a very conservative approach in loss, but if you Seventh Circuit's precedent regarding loss calculation, what's within the $25 million for sure, which the corporation had not even authorized him to spend? Now, he has indicated here in this argument that he, Mr. Tice, has indicated that $2 million of what the over in that acquisition account was to be an operating expense for the new newly acquired company. Well, that's not quite right. As I understand the witnesses said on the stand, it was this. They anticipated spending, after he made the second promotion, $10 million, and they were going to have a little bit of residual there, perhaps $2 million, for an operating account for that newly acquired corporation. They did not intend to spend another $15 million out of their operating account to make the acquisition. Just that transaction alone takes him well past $7 million. And so it doesn't really matter whether we've gotten in an exact accounting of every single dollar. Any one of these two or three transactions, I think, give you
Mr. Goodlow, your time is starting to go, and I do have another question, and that is one about the enhancement for aggravating role. Because I'm finding that there was at least one other participant. Who else was criminally liable? In other words, where in the record will we find support for the district court's finding that there was one other participant? I know that the government talked about the lawyer named Rosenfeld, Heather Domhoff, and Mr. Swanson's wife. The court found that there were fewer than five, but applied the enhancement under that otherwise guideline.
The other participant, if I may, have you completed your question, Your Honor?
Yeah.
The other participant or participants would be Mr. Rosenfeld, who did, in fact, admit to preparing false documents. Those would be some of the Vickers and Allen invoices that were submitted. Certain documents were backdated. That was done by Mr. Rosenfeld. The transactions involving Mrs. Swanson, the third Mrs. Swanson, Carolyn Swanson, was this. She was, I think, put on one of those corporations as a president or a vice president, some sort of senior official for one of those corporations that was basically receiving the money. She was not listed as a co-conspirator, and there was no indictment charging a conspiracy. But she clearly was an active participant in a crime, a scheme, which she knew about. Mr. Rosenfeld, without question, was, because he was preparing false documents which were used in support of the scheme. So there was one other participant. There probably were two, at least that I can think of off the top of my head. And I think there's no question but what this scheme was otherwise extensive. Does that satisfy your question? I believe that Mr. Tice was incorrect in one other way, and that is that ADM found that Mr. Swanson's actions were perfectly legitimate with regard to accounting for the money that was being invested in the Green Hit project. That's not entirely accurate as I understand the facts. The chief, he went to a meeting in New York basically to try and run down a little bit of information regarding their investment. He looked over accounting provided by Mr. Swanson. I think the accountant was Martin Geller and Company out of New York. He did not find, in fact, as Mr. Tice indicated, that everything was okay. He didn't find anything in the material that was particularly indicating something was wrong, but he didn't find that everything was okay. Less than 6 months after that, in fact, they wrote off that investment.
Thank you.
How much time does counsel have? 4 minutes.
Let's first start with the meeting between Mr. Swanson and the ADM executive. That testimony was fully discussed in the opening brief. There were citations to the record. The government in its brief saw fit to say not a single word about that. So for the government to get up now and somehow try to characterize that meeting or the conclusion of the meeting is not only improper, but it's just plain wrong. And I think the badges of its being wrong are what's happened in the briefs. Now, as far as the question about aggravating role, government counsel did pretty much the same thing that he did at the sentencing hearing. He threw out some generalities and, when pressed for details, really backpedaled. Now, this morning he says that Mrs. Swanson was an active participant in the scheme. I've read the trial record.
court will now go to the second case of the day, which is number 053276, Volkswagen of America, Incorporated, Sons of Peoria, et al.